The following ABC7 podcast is brought to you by ABC7News.com.
Earl Klugh is considered one of the premier jazz guitarists in the world. He's the king of smooth jazz with his acoustical playing. This week, he's just released his 35th album called The Spice of Life. And Earl Klugh is playing through the weekend at Yoshi's in San Francisco. We talked about the album, which includes originals and classics.
There are standards and people are aware of them, but they're not redone so often that it gets to be, you know, kind of commonplace. Sounds like Misty, and those are really great songs, but they're so covered, you know, so I try to look for things that, you know, when I'm doing this type of thing, you know, I try to find songs that are familiar, but just not as overdone, you know. You know, the songs themselves, they go through cycles, you know, so it's like, you know, I did Canadian Sunset. I'm sure at some point somebody will do it again, you know, so it's kind of...
You love that bass line. Yeah. You played keyboard, and I remember as a kid playing that song. It's very infectious, isn't it?
Yeah.
So what was the concept behind this production album with the orchestra and all that sort of thing that took you 9 years from the last CD?
Oh, well... Jeez. Well, really what it was is I just wanted to... make an album that showcased guitar playing, you know, not necessarily my compositional, because a lot of times I write so much on the keyboard that my compositions are, they're not guitaristic, you know. So I picked some of the songs that I had written that would be more suited for actual guitar playing, and I tried to adapt some standards and songs I'd grown up with or that I've been reintroduced to, like My Foolish Heart, or Say Say Bone. These were songs that I thought would be interesting in an album that was mainly originals, but you got a chance to cross eras and genres, because the two solo pieces I did were like kind of classical in nature, which you know, are kind of older style pieces. Then you had the standards, and then I had the contemporary pieces like Driftin' and Snap and some of those songs. So I wanted to do a wide range of guitar playing styles, you know, as much as I could. You know, I mean, there's a lot of styles I don't play too well, but I tried to showcase what I thought I did, you know, fairly well. And so that was the concept behind the record. It was to try and put myself in a variety of settings and just have a very listenable album. So when you put it on in your home, or you put it on your iPod in your car or something, it's something that you would listen to, you know, the whole way
through.
Because there's so many recordings that I really love, but I find myself changing from recording to recording. You know, that's just the way I am. But I want to have a lot of variety. So the whole title, The Spice of Life, a lot of people haven't really gotten that, but the saying is, variety is the spice of life. Yeah. So that's and to be quite honest, we're coming down to the wire, and I was drawing a complete blank on the title for the record, you know, and usually that doesn't happen. You know, I'll come up with these titles that I think are fairly clever, and then this finally came to me, and, you know, I was about like maybe 6 days away from having to bump the release because I didn't have a title. I said, well, that's not going to happen. I got to come up with a title.
So there you are.
Yeah.
Variety is, as you know. Hey, in this era with so many guitar players, they plug it in and the amps are going and there's a screeching sound and all that sort of stuff, this is an intimate, warm kind of feel. Playing acoustically, I think that relates more maybe to the listener?
To some listeners, definitely. You know, this was always my preferred instrument. You know, when I was a kid, after I'd been playing for about 4 or 5 years, you know, I got an electric guitar, and I tried, but it was just very apparent by that time to me that this was really my calling, you know, acoustic classical guitar. It just, there's more like actual connection between the instrument. Like if you play a trumpet or a piano, you have that immediacy, you know. And that's true with this. You know, I guess, you know, real guitar players who play electric guitar, they probably feel the same thing. But to me, it's more like, I say the electric guitar is more like an organ compared to a piano. As far as, you know, this is like an acoustic instrument, and the electric guitar is an electric instrument. And I find it so much more rewarding to play, you know, for my own self.
Yeah, can you change tone with just your fingers?
Of course. I mean, very much. Well, you know, very mellow would be as you play.
Yeah.
This is exaggerated, but, you know. And you can work all of these things, you know, with fingernails, without.
Yeah. You have remarkable hands.
You know, there's all types of volumes. You know, I'm not the best. Some of the great classical guitar players, it's amazing. They have such dynamics, you know. But this guitar brings out, you know, you have a lot of range. There's a lot of sounds and things that you can do. It's a lot of variety.
Is it really true that at the age of 13 you saw Chet Atkins on TV and that really kind of inspired you?
Oh,
maybe,
yeah.
Not the country music. I don't know.
Chet is so associated with country music, but I mean, most of his records, you know, and he's done like lots of country records, but I mean, he did a wide variety of music. I was really impressed with his classical guitar playing, you know, and like all through the 60s he did a lot of that, and even beyond that, but really in the 60s he did an album called Class Guitar, and so there was a lot of classical guitar that Chet played. He was a true, you know, fingerstyle player, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and there's so many innovations he captured. You know, one thing that he did, you know, you have what you call natural harmonics on a 12th fret, 7th fret, 5th fret, 3rd fret. I could never get those to work. 19th fret. And up here at what would be the 24th fret. And you get those by this type of ringing. Well, Chet, he worked in the studio with a lot of pedal steel players, and they would have harmonics all over the neck. So he kind of thought of, you don't have to use, I mean, something like this. You know, you can cut off the neck and...
Yes.
You know,
yes,
very innovative things, you know, and, you know, really, really ingenious things to play on the guitar. Is really like years and years and years ahead of his time.
Why did it take so long, 9 years from the last time you did it?
Well, you know, there's so much to change about the record business. You know, I had been signed to Warner Brothers for about 12 years, and before that I was on Capitol Record, and that was like 10, 11 years. And things just, they really changed corporately. You know, there was so much going on after CDs with the internet and everything. It was really hard to find a company that I had enough faith in. Because, you know, when you make a full production record, you're spending, you know, $100,000, $200,000 of money to put this out to the public. And I just didn't want to get caught like some people I know in the business, where you get started on a project and the company doesn't work out and you're in limbo, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just kind of took my time, because I didn't want to have a situation where I signed with someone and it wasn't going to work out, you know, which you know, you always run that risk. But,
sure.
The thing for me, I just continued touring, you know, which was really good. And we started going places around the world that I'd never been. Went to India, went to South Africa, went to Nigeria, went to Southeast Asia, Brazil, you know. And you find that there's a large audience all over the world. And it was really an eye-opening experience for me, because I got a chance to see a lot of places that I'd never seen before. And actually, you know, I had toured so much for... you know, like 23, 24 years, you know, I really didn't miss, you know, the non-recording. You know, I was still working on music and writing songs. And finally, you know, I had a situation that felt pretty comfortable with the Koch Record Company, their marketing and distribution. Because part of the problem is, in the old days, you'd sign and you'd write your music, and then you go to the A&R man and they tell you, well, I like this song, but I don't like this song. And I'm like, well...
Yeah.
Do you write music? Do you know anything about music, or are you just giving me a hard time? You know, so you know. So finally, you know, I put together a situation that's very comfortable and we're having a lot of fun working on the records. But that's really the story, you know. Plus, you know, my mom passed in 99, and that kind of knocked the wind out of me. And I really didn't miss it for a while, you know.
I understand, yes.
Yeah. But we're back out here, and I'm having a great time. And I'm looking forward to having a great week here in San Francisco. I love it out here. When I was in my late teens, early 20s, I would come out here two or three weeks a year, just on my own to kind of run around, watch who's ever at the clubs. I used to, when I worked with George Benson, I played at Keystone Corner with him a couple of times, and I'd always come by that club. You know, it was I have fond memories of this area. You know, I spent a lot of time here when I was younger.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing to me that you were so young when you were playing with him, and you were giving lessons when you were like 15.
Yeah.
Jeez.
I started young, you know, and I was pretty serious about it. I really love music, and my mother was so supportive of my effort. You know, because after school, after I did my homework, I would practice every night till time for bed. You know,
yes.
So she really. I mean, she went out of her way, to, get me lessons, to get me to all the concerts I wanted to go to when I was 13, 14, 15.
Yes,
so
yes.
It was a great thing.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
You're talking about signing with a new company and that sort of thing, and the record business has changed. What about the marketing of it? There's fewer record stores. We used to have Tower Records here. It was gigantic.
I know.
And so is it now the internet? Is that what's driving?
Well, there's tremendous internet for records at this point in time. CDs, you know, I call them records. And I think that eventually and probably very soon that will be what it is. Because what has happened to all segments of the recording industry, there are not as many stores, so you have to look for alternative means. And you know, it's like everything else. I mean, when I started, the first thing I remember when I was a boy were 78s, you know, and then 45s and 33 and cassettes and you know, so things never stay the same, you know. And I think it will fairly soon. I estimate next two or three years will probably all be all internet, pretty much, you know.
Kind of sad, isn't it? I like to hold something in
well,
my hand.
Well, yeah, me too. You know, the whole idea of downloading music into a physical thing, you know, they've got to fix that too, because it's like you spend so many hours putting the stuff in a little MP3 or iPod or something, you drop it, and then it's too time consuming to load the music, so they got to fix that, or that won't really work. In my eyes, anyway.
Will music change, or the sound of music? That's always going to be the same.
I think music kind of it goes through its periods, and there's a lot of change in music all the time. You know, I personally liked it more in the 70s and 80s than I do now, but that's just probably my age. You know, I think there's an awful lot of stuff that's been recycled and not in a good way. You know, but. I look back when you know, I remember stuff like how much is that doggy in the window and everything. So there's always that. And
whatever it was overpriced.
Maybe so. But, you know, every generation has their stamp on their contribution to the evolution of music, you know, in every era, you know, and... it's going to continue that way, and there's going to be great music, and there's going to be good music, and there's going to be music that I don't want to listen to too much. but it's all good. And, you know, having said that, you know, nothing is absolute, because I go back now and there's groups of music that I didn't think I liked too much, and you put a record on and you listen, it's like, man, this is really good.
Yeah, illuminating, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
All right, well, 20 years from now, 25 years, 30 years from now, what will they say about you? What do you hope people will say?
Well, I hope I'm still here to talk about it.
But,
oh, no, I'm teasing. I don't know. That I was, I was a good player, and I was very active most of my career and made a lot of records, wrote a lot of good songs, left something behind people would still want to hear, you know, at ever what level, you know. I mean, that's all you can really hope for, you know, is leave enough of a mark where there's something left behind, you know. But, you know, and the real thing for me is, you know, my self-fulfillment. You know, I really enjoy doing it. I love playing shows for people and like making people happy with my music. You know, it's really great. You know, the one really great thing about the internet, you get so many emails and things, people who you've never met or, you know, and they say really nice, wonderful things about, you know, it got me through this, or, you know, I really like this because of this. It reminds me of, you know, it's just, that's a real personal thing that happens from a non-personal thing. You know, like a computer, you know, it's really great. So, I mean, that's what I'm looking at, you know, just being able to touch lives a little bit, you know, make people smile or whatever.
Timeless.
Yes.
Jazz guitarist Earl Klugh appearing through Sunday at Yoshi's in San Francisco. I'm Don Sanchez, ABC7's Arts and Entertainment Reporter.
Thank you for downloading the Entertainment Insider Podcast. Look for a new podcast every Friday.